I had done such an excellent job of turning the cattle away from the gate that they had not only left the gate, they had pretty much left the country. I could see them in twos and threes, running towards the north side of the pasture, with cowboys whipping and spurring in pursuit. Actually, I hadn't wanted to throw such a scare into them. Scoring a few points against Benny the Imposter was one thing, but wrecking the entire roundup... One of the dangers of being as big and ferocious as I am is that it's hard to make a small impression. Everyone takes you seriously, don't you see? And the next thing you know, the small impression you intended to make becomes larger than life, so to speak. And as I've indicated, this seemed to be a good time to lay low for a while. I headed down to the creek and vanished in the heavy undergrowth of willows that grew along the sandy banks. This was an excellent place to hide out since the willows were virtually imponderable, implausible, implacable, impeachable. I know there's a word that just fits what I'm trying to say here. It's a big word, begins with M. And I get a kick out of using big words once in a while, but it appears that I've lost it for a moment. Imperceptible? No. Well, never mind. Sometimes big words are more trouble than they're worth, and a guy would be better off using simple language. The willows were so thick that a man on horseback couldn't ride through them. And now that I've said it, I remember the darn word. Impenetrable. That's a big rascal. No wonder I couldn't spit it out. Where was I? Oh, yes. In the imperceptible willows. Once inside the willows, I vanished without a trace. My plan at this point, to the extent that I had a plan at all, was to stay out of sight and camp out for several days until my little misunderstanding with Loper blew over and the cowboys were ready to forgive and forget. Peeking out of the brush, I saw Loper climb back on his colt and ride hard for the east side of the pasture. I could also see Benny the Imposter trying to turn a couple of cows and calves that were heading for the brush. I didn't wish him any bad luck, but since he seemed to be having it anyway, that was okay with me. I went down to the creek and got a drink, looking at the handsome face in the water and found myself admiring the nose, the shape of the head, the ears, the stern set of the eyes, the hard curve of mouth, which suggested a bold and shrewd mind at work. The hair, the massive shoulders that rippled with muscles and tapered down to feet that could have been used as a pattern for all feet. For while they appeared to be graceful and delicate at first glance, they were in fact the perfect tools of a sprinting machine. It has been said that all understanding begins with the feet, which just goes to show how important they are. Anyway, for half an hour or so, I stood by the water's edge, near hypnotized by the reflection I saw. All great works of art don't hang in museums. Sometimes you find them in unlikely places. I liked everything I saw in the reflection except the rope, which was still tied around my neck. I had no use for that rope and decided it was time to get shed of it. It occurred to me that by lowering my jaw and moving my head backwards on its pivotal, spinal, whatever you may call it, I could get the rope into my mouth and then make hash of it with my long, sharp teeth. I tried this for quite a while without what you would call great success. I discovered, A, that it's virtually impossible to get a good biting position on a rope around one's neck, and B, if one moves one's head backwards far enough, what often happens is that one topples over backwards. So there you are. Sometimes it's easier to accept life's imperfections than to chew them in half. Having finished my business at the water's edge, I became bored and decided to move on down the creek to look for new adventures and fresh scenery. Yet I had not planned to find the type of adventure and scenery upon which I stumbled upon. As I was passing through the jungle, the end of my 10-foot piece of rope lodged itself in the fork of a willow. I tried to uproot the tree, but found this near impossible. Or, to express it another way, impossible. most trees do not uproot well. Denied this solution to my problem, I abandoned the solution, yet the problem remained. What to do? That was the question. I was in the process of studying it from many different angles when, suddenly, I heard footsteps approaching through the jungle. Since I couldn't think of anyone I wanted to meet at that particular moment, I flattened myself out on the ground and tried to blend in with the surrounding fauna and fluoride. The footsteps came closer, and then they stopped, very near to the spot where I lay, invisible to naked eyes. And speaking of eyes, I rolled mine around in their sprockets until I could see two heads suspended above me. Further inspection revealed that the heads were attached to necks, the necks to bodies, and the bodies to legs and so forth. Upon seeing the sharp-pointed noses and yellow eyes of the suspects, I said to myself, "I think I've seen these guys before somewhere." And no sooner had that thought skipped across my mind than one of the suspects spoke.
We find Hunk Dog lying in jungle, far away from house and boom boom.
Perhaps I should intrude here to give a translation, for you see, the suspects in this case turned out to be none other than the notorious Coyote brothers, Rip and Snort. Little wonder that I felt I had seen them before, because I had seen them before. Not once or twice or thrice or thrice, but many times, and always under awkward conditions. For you see, any time a guy runs into a pair of cannibals, the conditions are likely to be awkward. These guys were terrible. Coyotes, you might recall, speak a peculiar dialect. Any dog who goes into full-time security work should be fluent in several languages, including the coyote dialect. At the risk of tooting my own horn, I should point out that I am something of a whiz at languages, always have been, even in the ancient and primitive dialect of Coyotus cannibalis. With that out of the way, let us proceed to the translation and take another look at the statement under our microscope, so to speak. We find Hunk Dog living in jungle, far away from house and boom boom. The first word uttered by this savage, you will notice, was the one-syllable explanation, This is one of the most commonly used words in the coyote dialect. Our studies of the talkatory patterns of wild coyotes indicates that coyotes are partial to short words. Is just about as short as a word can be. Any coyote who shortened it further would find himself saying either you or H, neither of which makes much sense, even to coyotes. Why do coyotes prefer short words? Good question. My own personal theory is that short words such as are hard to misspell and mispronounce, and are therefore popular with these miserable, lice-bitten creatures of the prairie. You'll notice that Snort referred to me as Hunk instead of the usual Hank, and perhaps you wondered why. Here we have a choice of explanations. 1. Hunk is the coyote word for Hank. 2. For unknown reasons, coyotes are not able to pronounce Hank. 3. Snort was not too bright and didn't even know that he was butchering my name. That should cover the hunk part of the mystery. Now, let's hurry on to the last two words in the translation, boom boom and house. As I've pointed out before, boom boom is the coyote word for gun. We have found evidence suggesting that boom boom has some relationship to the sound made by a gun. When fired, a weapon does not make the sound gun gun. So, I think you get the point. This process of creating a word from an actual sound is called onomatopoeia. Just thought I'd throw that in. And that brings us to the coyote word house. As odd as it might seem, house in coyote language means house. That does seem odd, doesn't it? But there you are. Well, with all the technical stuff out of the way, we can proceed to the chilling, spine-tingling adventures that resulted from my chance meeting with these two bloodthirsty cannibals out in the jungle. And don't forget, because the end of my rope had snagged on a willow tree, I wasn't able to run away. Not that I would have run away under different conditions, but let us say that I would have considered it a very attractive option. On the other hand, yes, I would have run away. Of course I would have. No dog in his right mind would talk to cannibals in the jungle, for as Snort had shrewdly observed, they had caught me a long way from house and Boom Boom.